welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News, joined as always by Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello and welcome, Ed.
Jennifer, it is always the highlight of my week when I see you.
Wow. Now I feel the pressure. There has to be some.
And may I say something? A few episodes back, you actually made some disparaging comment about my outfit or my ensemble, as they say. Let me just compliment you on your beautiful black and gold leopard skin shirt. And I want to remind all our listeners that the colors of Southwestern are black and gold, and I just love that. And thank you.
Well, and as evidenced in your tie also, we're kind of matchy today.
Every tie. So I made a commitment when I started as president that I will only wear black and gold ties forever, which means all these other ties have been gone into retirement, like my pink and my blue and my red. Don't wear them.
Well, it is, you know, it's the fall.
Yes.
And so the semester's underway. And I'm interested just to hear sort of how you feel like the semester's going at Southwestern so far.
It's great. You know, we have a bunch of first-year students that are so joyful and so energetic, and they just bring this palpable happiness to the campus, which is wonderful. I've started a tradition where now, one night a week, I will visit one new first-year residence hall, and I will deliver about 9 or 9:30 at night milk and cookies as a study break, and then I hang out with them. And I just did one last night. That's why if I seem a little tired today.
Did they keep you up late?
They did! And, you know, and these kids, you know, first of all, have homework and stuff and tests, but they wanted to hang out with this old guy, and they wouldn't let me go. And a couple of times I tried to extricate myself and said, well, you know, it's getting late. You've got homework. And they're like, no, we want to hear more stories about in olden days, you know, and back in the 1990s, you know. And it was really, really fun. And it's great to engage with students in that way, you know.
Well, and the thing about that is also they're going to remember that experience. You know, they may not remember every class they took, every essay they read.
Are you saying they're not going to remember my calculus one class? Really?
They may not. But they're going to remember the stories you told them about the olden days in their dorm at night with milk and cookies. I mean, that's a real kind of memorable moment
for them. That's right. And I mean, and that's what we should be trying to generate, right? I mean, everyone through life, but especially through one's formal education and beyond, should really be about thinking about how do you choreograph memorable moments.
Well, and it makes me wonder, you know, for these students, so they're what, 18 or 19?
Yes.
So we've talked before about how 20 years from now, they're not going to remember everything they took in every class. They're not going to remember every paper they wrote, but they're going to remember some tools and techniques and skills if they don't necessarily remember all of the topics themselves.
That's exactly right. And, you know, and I always phrase this as the 20-year question. You know, 20 years from, as an educator, 20 years from today, what will my students remember from their experience with me? And sad but true, Jennifer, is that, you know, when I'm teaching calculus, it's not going to be the derivative and the integral and limits. And I think that higher education has to embrace that reality. It's not an issue of whether it's real or not. It's an issue of when will higher education embrace it. That has to be front and center. Otherwise, we're teaching things that we know that the moment the student passes the exam, does the lab, or writes the essay, they're going to move on.
Well, and hearkening back to the olden days when I was in college
and when
you were starting your teaching career, I mean, seriously, back then, you know, there was no internet. So if I wanted to remember a history fact, I had a couple of options. I could remember it in my head. I could go back to notes that I took, or I could go into a library and double gasp, check out a book to look it up. But I couldn't just, you know, open my tablet or my laptop or my phone and find it at you know, literally at my fingertips.
Wherever you are.
Right.
You know, and that's such an impactful point, especially as academicians think about the future of education. Because at one point, being a learned individual was someone who really had a mastery of facts because they weren't around. There weren't a lot of books, right? You know, and today, you know, you can look up if you have an ailment, not saying that you can diagnose yourself correctly, but you could certainly get a bunch of options, maybe none of which are correct, but everyone has access to information. And so now the question becomes much more refined, for which experts used to have the skill, and now we need to have everyone to have the skill, is how do you use and process the information? The the information superhighway, you know, has billions and billions and trillions of gigabytes of stuff. What do you do with that? How do you put this story together? What do you believe? What do you understand? What is understanding? Those are the habits of thinking that 20 years after an experience in a real rich intellectual academic setting, you hopefully have developed and will hold with you.
So you said millions and billions and trillions. That's got to add up to infinity, right? That's millions and billions. I wonder how much information there actually is on the internet. You can call it infinity, right?
No, you cannot. Well, you can. I mean, right. Jennifer, you can, but I don't know what your major was. But if for anyone...
Psychology.
Well, then in the world of psychology, everything can be infinity. But in the world of mathematics, no. In fact... This is the second time. I floated infinity once before, and you got excited.
It's a fascinating concept.
Let's have that as a future episode. Write that down.
Yeah, okay. Let's add infinity.
Uh-huh.
Let's add infinity then.
Which, by the way, I think there's a certain poetry to this in when you're thinking about the 20-year question. Because when people think about infinity, they think about kind of this, you know, going off the horizon or endlessness. And really, that's how people should be thinking about their own education. Right, formal education will end. There will be a last class that you take. But hopefully, throughout the entirety of your life, that kind of seemingly infinity, we should be learning. And the question is, 20 years after your classes, what will you still have that will be impactful? And how will those lessons help you to continue to be a lifelong learner? Like, you know, as I talk about, how do you be your own Socrates? Right? The professor's not there to whisper in your ear. 20 years from now, I want my students to be able to teach themselves.
All right. So you're teaching a class about puzzlers. Do you want your students to be able to make puzzles, do puzzles, learn about puzzles?
No. You see, and you're saying this in a very disparaging way. In fact, put that down as an episode. I want to talk about my course, because if you're going to put it down, it's called Effective Thinking and Creative Puzzle Solving.
Well, you're going too fast. Effective thinking. Okay,
and,
I got it.
And creative puzzle solving. And the concept of this class, it's all 20-year. In fact, it's funny that you bring this up. It's all 20-year lessons. The puzzles themselves, who cares, right? But they're mind food. They're brain food. And it will instill habits so that they can then apply those habits of mind, habits of creativity, to the puzzles in their lives. So this is a course where, in some sense, there's no contextual structure, but rather it's more about thinking.
Well, I want to think about a new puzzler. So let's get to this week's puzzle.
All right. You know, so I'm going to actually go off script because you mentioned infinity.
Yes.
I'm going to give you a puzzle that comes with that.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. Ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So imagine you have, now this is something you can't practically do. So you have to use, this is theater of the mind.
Okay.
All right. So imagine you have an endless row of ping pong balls.
Okay.
So endless. That means you have infinitely many ping pong balls.
I can't even imagine the end.
Correct. There is no end. Well, there is no end to imagine.
Okay.
And each one is numbered with numbers in order. So the first ping pong ball has the number 1 tattooed on it. Then the second one has 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 and so forth. All the way out. Okay. Now, if you think about this, this is not even practical because most ping pong balls would be totally covered black because you couldn't even use a fine enough font because the numbers, the digits would be so much. Right. But
huge.
Just you can imagine that in your mind's eye. Okay. So now they're all lined up in order. I've got a big barrel. Don't worry about how big it is. It's as big as we need. Okay. Again, this is a exercise for the abstract mind. Now, imagine that someone gives us 1 minute on the clock.
Okay.
So we have a clock that shows a second hand, a red second hand that will go around clockwise. You know, one revolution is 1 minute.
Okay.
Okay. You have 1 minute to perform the following impossible task. So again, do this in your mind. You can't do it in real life. In the first half of that minute, so the first 30 seconds, I want you to drop in the first 10 ping pong balls.
Okay.
And then I want you to reach down in the barrel and find ping pong ball that's labeled number 1 and throw it away.
Okay.
So in the barrel, you're left with ping pong balls number 2 through 10.
Okay.
Okay. You have 30 seconds for that. That's no problem. You could actually do that. Okay. Now, in the half of the time that's remaining, so 15 seconds, okay, you have to repeat this. Drop in the next 10 ping pong balls numbered 11 through 20.
Yeah.
And then quickly look down and find ping pong ball number 2 and throw that away.
Okay.
So now you're left with ping pong balls number 3 through 20.
Yes.
You with me?
Yes.
Okay. Now in half the time that's remaining, 7.5 seconds, repeat the same process. Let in ping pong balls number 21 through 30. And now you have to quickly fish around. It's going to get hard now because you got to find ping pong ball number 3 and throw it away.
And there are more ping pong balls to choose from and less time.
Exactly. And then in 3 and whatever fraction of a second, you have to repeat. And then in 1 and whatever fraction, and then a fraction of a second, and then a smaller fraction. And you keep doing this. You keep cutting that time in half and 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 half. And you keep doing this until the red hand hits that minute mark.
Okay.
Now, you're going to be exhausted. You'll be working faster than the speed of light. You'll be working faster than the speed of sound. It's not possible, but mentally you can think about doing this.
Yes.
After this is done, the minute's up, and you calm down, you're resuscitated. The question is, you look in the barrel, and the question is, what do you see? How many ping pong balls are left in the barrel? So you keep taking half times, half time. And there are a lot of half times. It's not physically possible.
Yeah.
But mentally you can think about this. And the question is, if you were to do this mental exercise in your imagination, what is the correct answer to the question, how many ping pong balls will be left?
Okay. Can I just ask for one hint? I have one question.
You may ask a question, and I might not answer. But you know, we talked about how important it is to create questions,
yes.
So I like it.
So the question I have is,
please.
Is the time part of this a
yes.
major factor?
No.
Okay.
No. But I'm trying to get you to do a lot of things in a minute.
Yes.
Because I could phrase it another way. Maybe when I give you the answer, I can phrase it another way, but it will just take you a long time to do this.
Okay.
And I'm trying to get you to do it in a minute.
This is really interesting.
Yes. By the way, this comes, if I may do a little promotion plug, this comes from, it's one of the exercises in this textbook called The Heart of Mathematics, An Invitation to Effective Thinking, which I co-wrote with my co-author, Mike Starbird, and myself. And it's a textbook for math people. I mean, for humanities people that want to understand the beauty of math. And so this is in the section on infinity. Not surprising.
So this seems like a puzzle you could spend 20 years figuring out.
Well, and I think there is, in fact, if we can remember when I give the solution next week, to remind me to say, what's the 20-year lesson of this? But the 20-year lesson is to kind of, first of all, free yourselves from the constraints of what reality is, and think abstractly and think imaginatively and say, this is something I physically can't do, and yet in my mind I can do it. And when you can start to play with interesting ideas in your mind and reach interesting, profound conclusions, you're innovating, you're creating new ideas.
Just as we wrap up here, a question that comes to my mind. So this idea of, you know, 20 years from now and sort of thinking ahead to really grasping the skills and the thinking part of education, and maybe not the facts and the nuts and bolts so much. As an educator, do you think it's useful to tell that to students up front?
Absolutely.
Like freshman year, when you guys were having milk and cookies the other night, do you say to them, hey, I know you're not going to remember all of the facts that you learned, but what I want you to pick up are the skills and the knowledge. Should you say that up front or just let that evolve and soak in?
Great question. And the answer is you have to be very, very concrete, very clear, and you have to be very intentional. And they got to know it. Because some people might think, well, this will happen kind of by osmosis. But you can't have it in that way. You have to set exactly what it is, your goal set is, for an educational intellectual experience. And if this is the primary thing, then we have to put that up front, and we got to say, with intentionality, this is what it's about. And I think, by the way, it's more challenging for the educator than the educatee. Because because as a mathematician, I love math and I really want to talk math all the time. And to try to carve in a little time to talk about how mathematicians think, how we analyze, and how that can impact everything else, we tend not to do. And yet, that should be our lead story.
Will you come back in 20 years? Can we talk about this 20 years from now?
I'm just trying to think if I'm going to be alive in 20
yes,
years.
You will.
If I'm alive in 20 years, I'd be delighted to come
all
back.
All right, it's a deal.
Wheel me in.
Thank you, Ed, for helping us keep our brain sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can learn more at southwestern.edu, and you can keep your brain sharp by keeping up with the news at KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT News.
By the way, you know, mentioned the website.
Yes.
So, you know, southwestern.edu.
Yes.
If anyone finds themselves in Central Texas, they should come up to Georgetown. It's just 20 miles up the road. I would love to personally visit with them and welcome them to campus.
They can just come knock on your door?
That's right.
All right.